about right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today's April 21st, 2026. And our top story this morning, the end of the ceasefire, the deadline looms. 8 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow is when the two-week ceasefire between the United States and Iran is scheduled to end. As we speak, Vice President J.D. Vance is in the air, headed to Pakistan for the second round of peace talks. The first round failed outright about a week ago. Questions about the Iranian delegation. We've got Schrodinger's peace talks either are or aren't happening at the same time. Right now, there's been mixed signals. The Iranians, some people said, we're sending a delegation, and then state TV was like, no, we're not sending, and the infidel and all that other crap that they always say. Still questions about who's even in charge in Iran, whether that the people that are attending these negotiations are even capable of delivering on what they negotiate on. So that raises the question, will we see a resumption of hostilities, or is it Taco Tuesday? I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. Right now, the market remains blindly optimistic. Stocks are higher once again. Oil's a little bit higher right now, but still hanging out in the high 80s. The market seems dead set on just clinging to every shred of positive news and then completely blocking out the possibility of anything negative here. So, you know, as this is all going on, the Strait of Hormuz remains completely blocked at both ends, almost nothing getting through. We just had Kuwait yesterday declared force majeure again on further oil shipments, this time saying even if hostilities end and the shooting stops, it's still going to be a while because of the damage that was done to their facilities by the Iranian drones and missiles. We've got Alaskan Airlines is taking a $600 million additional charge for jet fuel. That jet fuel crisis, man, watch that one for a couple of weeks until those tanks run dry over in Europe and some of the Asian economies. But for right now, Alaskan Air is taking a charge that is bigger than the combined earnings of the past 2 years for that company. And one of the most obscure effects of this energy shortage or of whatever's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, Chinese copper output has just hit an all-time high. But you'll never guess why. I never in a million years would have guessed why Chinese copper output is surging, but it is tied to the Strait of Hormuz and the war in Iran. You'll have to stick around to the middle of the show for that one. That's going to have some people scratching their heads. President Trump has just invoked the Defense Production Act to fund energy infrastructure, things like coal power plants, natural gas pipelines, LNG facilities, grid infrastructure, all things that are struggling to find funding, that are hung up in courts because of challenges and this review and that review. When you invoke the Defense Production Act and you say because national security, all of that gets swept aside and you just start building the stuff. Switching over to tech news, we've got Amazon has committed to spend up to $25 billion or to invest up to $25 billion in Anthropic. And in typical circular AI nature, Anthropic has committed to spend up to $100 billion on Amazon Web Services. I give you money, and then you give that money right back to me. Round tripping. It's still going on. How many years have we been talking about this? Well, we've got another headline to that effect today. We've got Tim Cook is stepping down as CEO of Apple. John Ternus is going to take his place. United Healthcare is just ripping on earnings this morning. It seems having chatbots arbitrarily deny your patient's insurance claims is really good for business. And last but not least, we got to talk about what's going on at Barclays. This is one to keep an eye on. These synthetic risk transfers or significant risk transfers, SRTs. I'm telling you, at some point in the next year or two, we're going to be talking a lot about these. Right now, Barclays is under the microscope with the regulators in the UK. They have a couple of questions about some of the shady dealings going on with these SRTs, where they basically take the risk of bad loans and park them on the balance sheets of pension funds. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Stick around for the end of the show for that one. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And as we said, right now, the market remains optimistic, mildly positive here, up 17 points, about 0.25% in the green ahead of the opening bell. The Dow is up 231 points, a little less than 0.5% higher. United Health is a big chunk of that. You can see this big gap up right here earlier this morning. That was when United Health reported their earnings. And the NASDAQ is also higher this morning, 73 points or 0.28% to the upside. So the indexes are up across the board. The dollar, meanwhile, is a little bit stronger this morning, 98.27. That's about 22 basis points higher. A little bit of worries about what's going on in the Middle East, maybe driving that dollar a little bit higher here. Interest rates are also modestly higher this morning. 30-year yield at 4.884 is higher by just a fraction of one basis point. The 10-year yield is at 4.270%. That's higher by 2 points and change. The 2-year yield is at 3.758, higher by 4 points and change. And the 1 month is actually down a half a point at 3.655%. Looking over at Bitcoin, Bitcoin remains also relentlessly optimistic here. $76,030, higher by only about 170 bucks versus yesterday, but the market has completely shrugged off that security breach at Kelp Dow, or they're saying no, it was somebody else's fault, and leading to the run on deposits at Aave and all the other DeFi platforms. The price of Bitcoin is acting like that just never happened, still sitting at 76,000. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are a little bit lower this morning. Spot gold is at 47.77, down by 43 bucks or 0.9%. June COMEX gold futures are 47.95, down by about $33 or 0.7% lower. Spot silver is at 78.74, off by about a buck or 1.25%. May COMEX silver futures 78.79, that's down by a dollar and a quarter or about 1.6%. I still like the shiny though. Copper is pretty much unchanged here. Platinum is also pretty much unchanged. Palladium is higher by 0.5%. And crude oil, actually unchanged here. It was higher a little while ago. Now we're sitting here down about a nickel, 87.35 for June WTI futures. Taking a look at that chart here again, it's pretty much going a whole bunch of nowhere. Oil is pretty quiet, sitting right around that 50-day moving average. That's interesting to watch. Again, we'll have to just wait and see what happens in Pakistan between the U.S. and the Iranian delegations, assuming both sides even show up for the talks. But for now, we've got Kuwait declares further force majeure on oil shipments. This one hit midday yesterday. Kuwait declared a further force majeure on shipments of crude oil and refined products, taking into account that it would not be immediately able to meet its full obligations to customers, even when the Strait of Hormuz reopens. And this is important here, guys. The Strait reopening, yes, you're going to see a flood of tankers heading through, but it's not going to be right back to business as usual. There's going to be some repair time involved here. State-run Kuwait Petroleum issued the notice to customers on Friday, according to a document seen by Bloomberg. The company previously had declared force majeure, a legal clause allowing a company to not fulfill contractual obligations because of circumstances outside its control on the sale of oil and refinery products. This was back in early March. Kuwait has suffered multiple hits to oil infrastructure and output is now at levels last seen in the early 1990s after the Iraqi invasion. The latest notice takes into account that full operations will take time to recover once hostilities ease, according to a person familiar with the matter. So again, it's not just a switch that you flip right back on. There is going to be some repair time involved here. And we still have trouble at the airlines, especially the budget airlines, guys. This time it's Alaska. Alaska Air says it will spend more on fuel this quarter than it earned in the last 2 years. I forgot the word combined, the last 2 years combined. Alaska Air detailed the cost of the Iran war, and it's big. Some $600 million extra in fuel costs, which is more than their entire profits of the last 2 years. The parent company of Alaska Airlines, Hawaiian Airlines, and Horizon Air late Monday said it was halting full-year earnings guidance as it detailed its second quarter fuel bill, which it says equates to an earnings per share headwind of $3.60 a share. That's based on the assumed fuel bill of $4.50 a gallon and the expectation that it will consume 297 million gallons this quarter. To put those extra $600 million in expenses in perspective, Alaska Air earned $100 million last year and $395 million in 2024. So that fuel charge more than the combined earnings of the last 2 years. In other words, we're probably going to see some serious capacity curtailment at Alaska Air, along with other airlines. You know what? Alaska Air stock is holding up all right, all things considered. It's down about 2.3% ahead of the open. It fell 4% yesterday on this news. Year to date, though, the stock's down about 13.5%. And it's pretty much unchanged over the last year or so. Now, even as the airlines are struggling, we got earnings from GE Aerospace, and they were actually pretty good. GE Aerospace tops estimates as travel boom trumps war impact. General Electric's first quarter profit beat Wall Street's expectations as strong demand for air travel helped the jet engine manufacturer sidestep disruptions tied to the war in Iran. Adjusted earnings were $1.86 a share, the company said in a statement Tuesday. That's above the $1.60 that was expected. Sales were $11.6 billion, up nearly 30% from the same period a year earlier, compared with analyst predictions of $10.7 billion. The world's largest maker of jet engines maintained its guidance for 2026, but said it expects results to trend toward the higher end of the range of EPS. That's a $7.10 to $7.40 a share. It also published new assumptions, including the oil price remaining elevated through the third quarter before decreasing by year end. It flagged a possible near-term impact from fuel availability and the expected reduction in estimates of global economic growth, while noting that its guidance does not assume a worldwide recession. The results highlight how Cincinnati-based company continues to capitalize on strong demand for spare parts and maintenance services that airlines need to keep their planes flying. The gains may offer investors a measure of relief about the year ahead after the war in Iran disrupted carriers' operations across the Middle East and sparked a surge in the price of jet fuel. GE, which does business as GE Aerospace, saw sales rise in the most recent quarter, even as airlines announced plans to trim flying capacity to mitigate billions of dollars in additional fuel cost. So we spoke, it was about a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, about the shortage of jet engines because of problems at Pratt & Whitney. I think that's probably helping GE Aerospace here also. And the fact that, you know, people are still flying, even though flights have gotten more expensive. Jet fuel's gotten a lot more expensive. GE is making a lot of money on parts and maintenance contracts associated with those more expensive jet engines. So pretty good quarter for GE Aerospace, but the stock doesn't care. It's down 3.25%. I guess the market was expecting even better than that. $294 for GE Aerospace. That's down by about 10 bucks or 3.4% lower. That makes it down about 4 or 5% for the year, although over the last 1 year, the last full year, GE Aerospace is up about 67%. So this one has had a pretty good run. Meanwhile, this is something I never in a million years would have guessed. Chinese copper output hits record on tailwind from sulfuric acid. This is like several orders of magnitude removed from a disruption in the Strait of Hormuz, but all of a sudden Chinese copper output is ripping. Chinese copper smelters in China churned out a record volume of refined metal last month as surging prices of byproduct sulfuric acid encouraged higher output and aided the industry's profitability. Production of the metal that's key to the energy transition rose to 1.33 million tons in March, the highest in data going all the way back to 1990, according to figures from the National Bureau of Statistics on Tuesday. That brought output in the first quarter to 3.785 million tons, up 9.3% year over year. Chinese copper output is ripping here. Chinese smelters, the world's largest suppliers, has proved resilient in recent quarters, even as a slump in processing fees to a record low, driven by a shortage of concentrate, prompted rivals to cut output, including in Japan. The companies led by large and efficient state-owned firms have been aided by their commitment to local government growth. Another key boost has come from the surging income from sulfuric acid, with Chinese prices at a record after the war in Iran choked off sulfur supplies derived from oil and gas production. For each ton of copper, Chinese smelters earn more than 5,000 yuan, or about $733, from sulfuric acid, boosting their willingness to operate. That's according to Yang Changhua, chief executive at Beijing, something I can't pronounce information, at a conference last week. So they closed the Strait of Hormuz. All of a sudden, no fertilizer is getting out. Less oil is getting out. The byproduct of refining oil is sulfuric acid. Sulfuric acid is the primary use of sulfuric acid. About 60% of its use is for making phosphorus fertilizers, which fertilizer prices are also skyrocketing because of the Strait of Hormuz and the shortage of the inputs. So you also get sulfuric acid when you refine copper. So they're making extra money from the sulfuric acid. Their byproducts are selling for way more a ton than they used to. Before the war, it was something like $400, $500 a ton. Now it's $733. Refining copper is a very narrow margin business. So, hey, we're making more money from the sulfuric acid substitute. Sure, let's refine more copper. Who cares what we do with the copper? We're making money on the sulfuric acid. So, you know, that's just one of the weirdest knock-on effects from what's going on in the war. Drives up fertilizer prices, drives up sulfuric acid prices, resulting in more copper being produced in China. Also, by the way, more copper being produced in China. Remember, the output of copper mining and copper refining is silver also. So maybe possibly some more silver hitting the market because of this. I just throw them out there. Back stateside, we've got President Trump invokes the wartime powers to fund new energy projects. The Defense Production Act has been called here. President Trump invoked the Defense Production Act to provide federal funds for a wide range of energy projects as his administration faces pressure to help curb rising oil, gasoline, and electricity costs. Remember, those electricity costs aren't going up because of Iran. They're going up because of data centers. Trump on Monday signed five presidential determinations under the law targeting domestic coal power, liquefied natural gas, domestic petroleum, and power grid infrastructure, areas where he said insufficiencies threaten national defense. The move allows the Energy Department to deploy funding that was secured last year in Trump's big, beautiful bill. Under the directives, the agency is authorized to use energy purchases, financial support, and other tools to overcome delays, financing shortfalls, regulatory holdups, and market barriers. With Trump's signature, the determination set the stage for the federal government to release funds targeting purchases under those categories later. Projects eligible for support could include coal-fired power plants, refineries, and facilities that manufacture gas turbines and transformers, electrical equipment that's been subject to shortages. And that's a big one, those last ones, the gas turbines and the transformers. No matter how bad you want a new power plant, you can't make those things just appear. And right now, the queue for those large components is about 5 years long, which means if you order it now, you might have it by 2031, even though supposedly your data center is going to come online later this year somehow. And one of the more obscure secondhand effects from the war in Iran, the world's top condom maker says it plans to raise prices by 20 to 30% and possibly further due to the impact of the U.S.-Iran war in the petrochemical industry. I guess latex is getting more expensive, and so the price of condoms is going to go up 20, 30%, maybe even more. And, you know, we've been talking about this declining birth rate worldwide. Well, the solution to higher prices is higher prices. Maybe, just maybe, this might solve the declining birth rate problem. Although you also get diseases and everything else. You know, it's a family show. Why don't we move on with all available haste? Again, who would have said condom prices rising because of the Iran war this decade? Meanwhile, we've got another circular deal in artificial intelligence here. Amazon commits up to $25 billion investment in Anthropic. What do you think Anthropic's going to do with that money? They're going to give it to Amazon, of course. Amazon has agreed to make an investment of $5 billion in Anthropic with the possibility of up to a further $20 billion in future investment tied to specific commercial targets. Alongside the previous commitment of $8 billion, Amazon's total potential investment in the Claude developer would rise to $33 billion. Additionally, the two firms have expanded their partnership with an arrangement that will see Anthropic secure up to 5 gigawatts of Amazon's Trainium chips, including present and future generations. This move is expected to support the development and deployment of Anthropic's advanced AI models. All right, so this money has to go to Amazon's chips. No money for NVIDIA in this deal, apparently. Anthropic has also pledged to spend more than $100 billion over the next decade on AWS technologies. This will cover current and future Trainium chips, as well as tens of millions in Graviton CPU cores. Round and round we go, the carousel of money in the AI space. I give you money, you give it right back to me. I'll report it as revenue. Sure, why not? Amazon stock up about 2.4% on this news, $254.31 for Amazon. Meanwhile, Tim Cook is stepping down as the CEO of Apple, and he's had one heck of a run. Cook will be replaced by John Ternus, Apple's Senior Vice President of Hardware Engineering. That's pretty much the story there. Tim Cook's not going to be the CEO. He's going to stay on as Executive Chairman of the Board of Directors. He's still going to do the government outreach, so he'll be the one giving President Trump the gold brick with a piece of plexiglass on top. You know, Tim Cook has had a heck of a run here. He's been CEO since 2011. Let's just take a look at Apple stock here real quick, all right? Apple stock, not really reacting. It was up 1% yesterday. It's down 0.7% today. Not really reacting to this. But let's zoom out a little bit from Apple stock, because Tim Cook took over in 2011, and Apple shares in 2011 were trading around, we'll say, $13 a share, currently trading at $271. So look, if you're an Apple shareholder, Tim Cook has done right by you, and that's not even including dividends. Apple does pay a small dividend. So he's done really good for the shareholders. That being said, the biggest criticism of Tim Cook's tenure at Apple was the failure to innovate. Apple's last big breakthrough was the iPhone. They haven't really done a whole lot ever since. We've had the earbuds. The iPad was just a big iPhone. The Apple Vision Pro was a dud. Apple came out with a pen, which I'm sure Steve Jobs was turning over in his grave when they came out with a pen, because he hated styluses on Blackberries. So will Apple start innovating again? I don't know. I guess we're going to have to wait and see. But again, that being said, it's kind of hard to look at this stock price over Tim Cook's tenure and say that he was a bad CEO. That certainly wasn't the case. Apple services business has exploded under him as well. And United Health raises outlook after profit beats all estimates. Oh, the worst company ever. They did really good. United Health reported first quarter profit that blew past Wall Street expectations and boosted its outlook for the year, a sign of the health conglomerate's progress toward rebuilding credibility with investors after a collapse a year ago. Adjusted earnings were $7.23 a share, the company said in a statement Tuesday, above analyst estimates. A key gauge of medical costs was better than expected, and the company raised its profit view by 50 cents a share. Revenue in the quarter topped analyst views. The company's medical loss ratio, which shows how much premium revenue is paid out for care, was 83.9%, more favorable than Wall Street anticipated. That figure, closely watched by investors, was driven by more active medical management to reduce costs, CEO DeVite said. More active medical management means we arbitrarily declined more claims than we really should have. That's how they drove their earnings per share beat. A milder flu season and favorable reserves from prior periods also helped improve the medical expense ratio, he said. United Health stock is up big this morning, 8.1% higher, $349.85. Remember, United Health is the biggest component of the Dow, so that is why the Dow is ripping so much this morning, more than the other indexes. But also keep in mind, over the last year, this stock was down 28%. Over the last 5 years, down about 18%. Had a really bad 2025 after their CEO was assassinated in the street, shot in the back by that little trust fund wannabe communist baby from New York. And for some reason, people put them on T-shirts now. I don't get it. But look, it's a terrible company that terrible things happen to them, and they do terrible things to people. There's an awful lot of terrible here. But right now, United Health shareholders, they're making money this morning. Last but not least, Barclays faces scrutiny from the UK regulators over its SRT deals, synthetic risk transfers. Again, keep an eye on those guys. This is like your next private credit, the thing that Jack warned about for a year before anybody really noticed it. Keep an eye on these SRTs. UK regulators have told Barclays to assess its processes for significant risk transfers, transactions that allow the bank to offload loan risk and bolster their capacity to grow. Barclays, one of the largest issuers of SRTs, is commissioning a Section 166 review, which typically involves appointing a consultancy to look at the firm's activities, according to people with knowledge of the matters. Regulators are requesting an examination of corporate governance and decision-making systems around the bank's SRT deals, the people said, asking not to be identified. Section 166 reviews require the firm to bring in an outside expert to look at its practices and produce an independent report for the regulators. SRTs allow banks to reduce credit risk and free up capital they'd otherwise have to use to insure their own loans. That increases leeway for things like new lending, acquisitions, shareholder payouts. Barclays has offloaded risk to investors tied to £54 billion or $73 billion of their credit portfolio as of the fourth quarter of last year. They're one of the most prolific issuers of SRTs. All right. So what do the regulators have questions about? The regulator emphasized that banks should take a substance over form approach to SRTs and evaluate the true economic risk of such deals. It also said it expects the firm's senior management to be appropriately engaged on any transactions that lead to a reduction in risk-weighted assets. In other words, we want to make sure your math is accurate. Are you freeing up a little too much capital because of these SRTs you're selling? Be honest. Keep yourself honest here. Separately, the PRA wrote to the chief financial officers across banks last year, raising concern about the financing of SRTs. The supervisory arm of the Bank of England said in certain areas, not all banks were demonstrating a sufficiently thorough assessment of the eligibility of collateral for SRTs. Now, typically the collateral is either cash or things like U.S. Treasuries, right? And remember, an SRT, that's when like a pension fund or a hedge fund gives money or other assets to the bank. They're held in escrow, and then the bank makes regular payments to that investing firm, regular yield payments to them. But if the loan goes bad, the bank seizes the collateral. So the regulators have questions, worries about the quality of that collateral. That's been a big problem in the private credit space this year as well. And lastly, the European Central Bank is also looking into what extent banks are financing investments in SRTs, highlighting a potentially circular effect of the deals. Now, this is where it gets a little crazy, because if I'm a hedge fund and I want to buy an SRT, what some hedge funds are doing is they're borrowing money from the banks, and then they're giving that money to the bank to buy an SRT. And then the bank pays the yield to the hedge fund. Now, remember how the SRT is supposed to work. The bank made these loans, and so they sell a significant risk transfer against them. If that loan goes bad, they seize the money from the SRT. Well, if the hedge fund that bought the SRT borrowed that money from your bank to begin with, then you haven't really offloaded any risk, because now that other loan on your books has gone bad because the hedge funds borrowed that money from you in the first place. Hey, circular financing, just like the AI deals. So the regulators have a lot of questions over what the banks are doing here. I think when all is said and done, when the dust settles from the next crisis, we'll find that these synthetic risk transfers made things a lot worse and didn't actually help at all compared to what they were advertised as. Well, I just want to say thank you very much, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button if you're new here. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. There's links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.